You may have already sat down, opened your presents, sat down with the family for Christmas dinner, but this, the Squawker Talker Christmas special, is the moment you've been waiting for. As mentioned on a previous podcast, we're going to be talking about our players of the decade. As 2019 comes to an end, we're celebrating our favourites of this decade, not necessarily the best. This episode is sponsored by BetBull, but unfortunately, because we're recording early, we do not have any predictions to review, and we will not be bringing you any predictions. This is purely nostalgia and praise for some of our favourite footballers. And joining me on a journey through 2010 to end of 2019, first of all, chief writer at Squawker, Mohammed Butt, welcome
to the Avengers Endgame of podcasts.
Yes,
going back and looking through our great sits.
Are you excited?
I'm very excited.
I am really excited for this one, and we had loads of listeners that are also excited about this. And another excited guest on the Squawker Talk Christmas special is, for a hat trick, Oliver Young Miles. Welcome.
Hello. I'm buzzing.
You sounded it. You sounded it. We'll have to jazz that up with some bells and whistles. And last but certainly not least, the third guest on the Christmas Squawker Talker Players of the Decade. I don't think you understand how big that is. Is chief editor at Squawker, Will John Hall.
Mm-hmm. It's really me.
It is.
Oh, and happy Christmas, everyone.
Yeah, wow, what? Who'd have thought we'd have been spending Christmas Day together?
For your
yeah,
podcast.
Because yeah, this is recorded on Christmas morning.
You already said you were recording early.
I know. That was the joke I was going to make, Will. But
that's the joke.
This is, of course, pre-recorded. So if anyone had an incredible game in between this, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to mention that. All stats are correct as of, obviously, I don't need to say that, really. But this is fun. We've all picked a player, our favourite player, as I said. Doesn't have to be the best. It's someone that you love and that you could spend a podcast talking about. And then we'll be looking at some of the Squawker writers have sent in their favourite players. We obviously know Sam Long, who couldn't be on this podcast. We know who he would have picked, any listener of the podcast. And then we'll be going through some of the listeners' submissions that I had on Twitter. Thank you again for doing that. We'll be talking about those players and basing on whether we think they are worthy contenders for your favourite player of the decade.
Who would lift me on here?
But we're going to start with you, Mo, for this.
Go on, then.
I mean, think we all know who it's going to be.
Well, I mean, there were two options. Sergio Busquets ran very close to the eventual winner because, you know, Busquets is an amazing midfielder, fantastic, just wonderful to watch. His rise to prominence over this decade and dominance of this decade, defensive midfield position, has redefined what a defensive midfielder should be able to do. But it's Lionel Messi. He's just amazing. He's just a wonderful, magnificent player to watch. He's also been the best, which is why I didn't want to pick him, because it's like, oh, that's kind of dull, because obviously, you know, but he began and ended the decade as the Ballon d'Or winner, if whatever that, you know, if people care about that sort of thing. But it's quite impressive, I suppose, to begin and end of the decade winning the Ballon d'Or. Like, that shows the longevity he has to start. I mean, he's 32 now, he'll be 33 in June, so he was 22 when he started this decade. It's basically been his decade. Football has been fantastic. He's won, surprisingly, only two Champions Leagues. He's won a whole bunch of La Liga titles. I think he's only failed to win La Liga three times in the decade, 2012, 2014, and 2017. And on two of those occasions, literally, it was one game. We lost it by about 1 point, and one game would have swung it. And both of the games that swung it would have had decisions that would have been ruled out, which would have been overruled by VAR had VAR been existent. So,
in a celebration of our favourite players in the world, contentious referee decisions and VAR have made a appearance.
It's just to illustrate.
You could have mentioned his 91 goals in 2012.
Well, I mean, I'll get to that. Point out that how good he's been. Like, only once has he been completely utterly blown away in the league, which is 2012 Real Madrid, got 100 points, very impressive for them. And that was the one time he's never really, like, he was out of it, right? Every other time he's either won or competed for until the very last day, La Liga. over an entire decade, that's absurd. That's unforeseen, unmatched dominance. Like, for one player to be constant in attack. Like, obviously, there have been other players that have been there for the whole decade. Busquets, Piqué, actually just those two. And, you know, they're impressive too. But to do it in attack as well, a position which declines rapidly as you age, which requires so much changing as well of style and football. Yeah, and just watch Messi. It's just amazing. You could watch him when he was young, when he began the decade. He was this lightning quick wing forward, played very much on the right, darting forward. Then Pep moved into false nine and he completely turned the game on its head. I mean, shout out Francesco Totti for really bringing the false nine back to public consciousness, but Messi took it to a whole new level. You know, there are false nines and then there's Messi. It's funny because he made everyone else think the false nine is something. Yeah, we can do that. That's easy. And it's not easy. It's very, very hard in a possession team as well to play false nine and do it the effectiveness he does it. Destroyed Man United in 2011 Champions League final. No one's ever done, you know, the most dominant final ever, as people are calling it. You know, several Man United players seem to have traumatic stress, you know, reactions to that, like Carrick. And you see him talking on Graham Hunter's Pass the Ball, Take the Ball, Pass the Ball documentary. He just sounds like, yeah, that was the best team ever. Mm. Rio Ferdinand always like seems to be eulogising and also just like lamenting the fact that he had to play against Messi in that game. Did a very good breakdown on it recently on BT. But yeah, Messi is unparalleled in terms of his ability. You know, just watching him is a privilege because every game he'll do something magic. Even the most recent Clasico, which was, you know, not good and he didn't play well, one magical pass to Jordi Alba. But like, what other player is there in the world that for an entire decade has done something magical at least once in every single game he's played? Like, I can't think of a single one. And he has. And he's a genuine privilege. But in terms of pure numbers, just because, you know.
Just because it's squawker,
let's have some pure numbers, right? He has 368 league goals in the last decade, 141 assists. Those are both top among Europe's top five league players. In terms of all competitions, he has 521 goals. Can't get the assist for that. Mm. Cristiano Ronaldo, for reference, the other great player of the decade, great goal scorer of the decade.
The person that shared the Ballon d'Or podium in pretty much every...
Messi
obviously had that fifth. And Ronaldo had a sixth.
And the two of them have basically, with Neymar in 2015, have shared the top score of Champions League between the two of them. So in terms of goal scoring, obviously Messi has more to his bow and that's why he's the best. But in terms of goal scoring, the two have had a real race and competition this decade. Messi comes out on top in all competitions, 521. Cristiano Ronaldo has 477. That's club, that's Champions League and all competitions. Go to club and country. Messi has 578, Cristiano has 554. So 578 goals for club and country in the last decade. That's absurd.
And again, this is recorded before the final game of the season.
So we'll never know,
but he may or may not have scored 50-plus goals for club and country every year. Got 40.
Oh, God, yeah, of course.
Measly 45.
Because he was injured in 2013. He had that bad pick-up injury against PSG and missed
That's
the end
no
of the season.
That's no excuse.
No, it's not. It's terrible, really. He's useless. Overrated player. But, you know, he's just unreal. Mm. He's to watch him develop has been great. So, like I say, he started off as a wing forward, scoring goals, developed into a false nine, terrorised Europe, terrorised the world, revolutionised the idea of a false nine. So much of what we're seeing now is built in the idea that the nine can do more than just pin their defences back and score goals. Look at Bobby Firmino at Liverpool, who are probably the best side around right now. Pep Guardiola's gotten Sergio Aguero to buy into doing more than just scoring goals, which is remarkable at Man City. And, you know... even the best teams, I mean, the exception probably is Bayern Munich winning the treble in 2013 where they had Mandzukic up front, who was just a workhorse. But like, you look at Real Madrid.
You look at
Real Madrid's three wins came with Karim Benzema up front, who is way more than just a typical... I mean, he was a typical number nine, if you watch watch him at the start of the decade. After Messi, he's become a much more rounded player. So he's influenced like that every facet of the game. And then after that, he moved back to the right, obviously, became the sort of elder statesman player. In like when Luis Enrique first showed up,
grew a beard.
Grew a beard and got some tats after the
bleached
trauma.
His hair.
After the trauma of losing the Copa America, took Argentina, by the way, to three finals in a row. Argentina
didn't win any.
Butler, but Gonzalo Higuain, our most hated man of the decade.
Oh no, I can't bleep out. No,
no, he
missed
one on ones in every single all three of those finals. But look, honestly, no team to go to three consecutive finals in 3 years. The mental strength that requires with a team that, let's be perfectly honest, with the exception of Javier Mascherano, was not very good, and Angel Di Maria was not very good. I know they had Higuain and they had Aguero and other big names, but none of those players regularly play well for Argentina.
Yeah, I wouldn't say the team's not very good, considering Higuain, I think, has got the Serie A record for most
goals. No, but this the point
season.
Is they're individually, they're all great on paper, but in terms of players who show up for Argentina, like, you were better off with Tevez than Higuain or Aguero, and Tevez wasn't particularly great for Argentina.
But so, Tevez was also really good.
No, but I'm just saying, it's...
We're getting into other debates here now. Contesting the
Come
quality.
Come on, guys, it's Christmas.
Rating. And, every single Argentina forward that has let Messi down in the 2010s.
Not just let Messi down, let themselves down. Let themselves down, my friend.
Country down.
They have. And that's the other thing. Even Messi has done that as well. Let's not forget 2016 final, he missed the penalty too. So it got to him eventually and he started doing the same thing. But you look at taking that team to three consecutive finals is outrageous. And I mean, had Di Maria not got injured in the World Cup, who knows what would have happened. You know, I mean, Higuain missing the chances, whatever.
I'm going to drop some more numbers on
it. Go on there. Oh, please do.
Because a favourite stat of Skorka, and when I say that, maybe I'm just projecting it onto myself entirely, is dribbling.
Yeah.
And Messi is... undoubtedly the king of doing that.
Yeah.
So many famous goals where he has dribbled past the entire team. These stats are not up to date, but just going through and talking about it, recently we were doing, we were asking Opta to give us like just all their data on some top tens of statistics. So this is going a bit before the decade anyway, but we wanted to, so it included as many players. Since 2006-07, and then this goes up to 15th of November, so a bit out of date, but he will still be top. Messi had completed 1,880 dribbles in the league, so just in La Liga, which was 600 more than any other player in that time. Eden Hazard, who again is sort of the heir to that dribbling ability, definitely the Premier League's dribble king, was second. And then no one else had been 1,000. Franck Ribéry, 939.
Yeah.
So over a decade, Messi is...
I mean, Ribéry would have cracked 1,000 if his legs were made of stronger stuff.
But that's the thing. Yeah. That's what makes Messi so great as well.
Yeah.
He has been fit for the whole decade.
Yeah.
That's another thing that these players will be remembered for, is they don't just have those three or four seasons of absolute bonkers production. Yeah. Messi has done it for the entire decade,
and that's why
said.
That's why a lot of people in games where Barcelona lose, there's always someone comes up with stats, or Argentina lose, that Messi ran less than the goalkeeper. But that part of why he's always been available is because he manages his own game, and other great players do this as well. Like, I've never understood the criticism of great players, he doesn't track back. Like, why would you want your best attacking players? Like, look at Antoine Griezmann as a great example. He works into his own box. He's often exhausted and way too tired to do anything attack because he works back.
Do you know who also fell victim of that? I felt like that happened to Fernando Torres when he went to Chelsea. Didn't score for a long while, so then became just sort of, I've got to try.
Yeah.
I've got to keep trying harder, and did so much actual running for that Chelsea team that whenever he got in the box to finish, his legs just almost gave away.
Edinson Cavani is a great example as well. Like,
I think because of this Ronaldo-Messi thing, dynamic, the competition between those two, one little thing you could praise Messi for that goes under the radar a bit. Because Ronaldo is seen as the player who works for his records and all his achievements, whereas Messi had like this sort of God-given natural ability, it actually goes under the radar that Messi is a player who... has done lots to sort of ensure he was fit well into his 30s and stuff like that. I remember reading something a while back where he hired a personal chef to sort of took control of his diet at sort of a stage in the decade that this wasn't ubiquitous among footballers.
Yeah.
One thing was like he was crazy for like fizzy drinks or something, or Sprite in particular. Completely cuts that out.
No, basically, this is the story. When Pep Guardiola first took over in 2008-09, one of the things he did was he hired Juanjo Brau to basically just be Messi's shadow. Like, he went with him on holiday, just to always keep him in shape, because Messi, of course, was very injured when he was young. He always got injuries. Part of that was he lived a very unhealthy lifestyle, ate loads of steak and fizzy drinks and pizza. He just didn't leave, because he was 21, whatever it was, and his role model was Ronaldinho. So what do you expect? Mm. And then, so that's why Pep got rid of Ronaldinho, got rid of Deco, and brought in Juanjo Brau. Like, look, just go with this guy, live with this guy, make sure he eats healthy, gets himself right. And now, of course, Messi's an adult, and Messi has. And so, he's made loads of sacrifices. And it is this ironic thing that he's just sort of, it's seen as this God-given talent. Yeah, he definitely has a talent that you would argue is, innate. But then so does Cristiano, so does anyone, really. Like, any top-level footballer, there is a degree of natural genius there that they work on, and some players have to work harder than others. True. You look at Eden Hazard's magnificent talent, a late reputation of I don't want to work too hard. So, and that's fine, but to maintain the level of basically the best player in the world for an entire decade, with the exception of maybe 2013 when he got a big injury, that's ridiculous. Mm. Like, to that kind of consistency is literally unheard of in the game. Because, I mean, even Pele, for all of the talk about Pele, I mean, that was a whole lifetime ago. I think it was like a different sport then. He was never the best for an entire decade, and Maradona certainly
wasn't. In training. Oh. 1,000 goals.
Pele. Yeah. you know,
the one Messi thing, again, about the learning of craft, Messi did mainly because Ronaldinho existed.
Yeah.
Messi wasn't good at free kicks.
No.
Until recently. That is a genuine, and I think that's overlooked because of how bonkers he is at them now.
12-13, I think it was the first time he scored a free kick for Barcelona.
Yeah, but even after that, it was like 6 years.
Yeah.
I remember when he broke the record, broke Ronald Koeman's record for scoring the most free kicks for Barcelona, which is crazy when you think Koeman
was a hell of a kick. I mean, good Lord.
But it's very much a late thing. And then now all you see is Messi has more free kick goals than clubs.
Yeah.
But that's only in the past 2 years. That is a sign. And we did the article about how Maradona taught him for when he was working with Argentina, etc. But that, Messi obviously has always had a brilliant technique.
Yeah.
But he learned how to take a free kick. And not only learned how to do it, he mastered the ability to do it that made it look like he was taking penalties.
Yeah, I mean, he's ridiculous. And it's not just that he is the best. It's that he's just, I love watching, because he's so much fun to watch. It's one of those things where, the rare treat where you're going to watch a Barcelona game and you know that even if the game itself is not particularly great, especially in the last couple of years under Valverde, it's going to be kind of a slog, but Messi's going to do something amazing. Mm. At the start of the season when Messi was injured for Barca, it really was painful to watch Barcelona because they were so bad. But then you knew Messi's going to do something good, and he did more often than not. And he changed the decade completely. I mean, that's the thing. Like, there was to look at it, like, we're doing the thing we're going to do a talk about what would it be like without them, right?
Mm.
That would be the thing. Without Messi, the whole decade changes, and not just because he's been amazing, but basically without him, Guardiola will still revolutionize Barcelona, but it wouldn't happen as fast, right? So you probably wouldn't get the treble in 89, may not probably win it back to back or whatever. So without Guardiola revolutionising it that quickly, Real Madrid don't panic, bring back Florentino Perez, and Perez doesn't go mad and sign basically the Real Madrid team that won La Decima, like Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, Ronaldo would have come anyway because that was previously agreed with Ramon Calderon, but Kaká wouldn't come, Benzema, Xabi Alonso, these key guys, and then that whole big spending of Real Madrid, that surge, Mourinho wouldn't have been recruited because there wouldn't have been no need, because Barcelona wouldn't have won the treble, wouldn't have become the best team in the world. So Mourinho doesn't come in, Mourinho doesn't help them get over their round of 16 curse that they had. So the two teams that have dominated the decade are like more than anyone else is Barcelona and Real Madrid, right? And without Messi, does that even happen? Like, I think Barcelona would eventually come to it because of Guardiola, but it wouldn't have been as quick and it wouldn't have been as dramatic as it was. And it would have been something more like we see with Man City and we saw with Bayern Munich, where they're very, very good and they're probably one of the best two teams in the world, but they're not unbeatable. They're not this terrifying supernatural force. And then the Real Madrid side that emerged as counter to Barcelona, Barcelona winning all the leagues, Real Madrid winning all the Champions Leagues, won 3 in a row, 4 in the decade. That wouldn't happen because the team that did that was largely built in response to Barcelona. So the entire decade changes.
It's been shaped by smallest of footballers.
It's like Lord of the Rings, you know, the littlest among us have,
You could make the point as well that Ronaldo isn't scaling the same heights that he otherwise.
Yeah, because he wouldn't be pushed to.
It's like what Guardiola said about the Man City Liverpool rivalry that we saw last season. They wouldn't have got to as high a level after hitting the 100-point season if they didn't have a title rival who was breathing down their necks or even ahead of them for much of the campaign.
I mean, he still scored 44, obviously, when he wasn't competing against Messi, but I think, like, I mean, this sounds ridiculous, but I think, like, he would have been, like, just scoring over 30 every year, you know, which is still ridiculous.
He would have been scoring at a normalised
rate.
A normalised rate that is seen as spectacular, but now Messi and Ronaldo in this decade have warped the complete understanding of what is a good. Lewandowski has 30 goals by December in 2019.
I once had a football manager save where I played as Juventus and I bought a Brazilian called Bruno Mazenga and I scored 73 goals in the season with him and I deleted the game. I was like, this is unrealistic. It took me out of it. I was like, there's no way you could score 70 goals. This is boring. I turned it off. And then Messi literally scored 70 goals in the season. I was like,
70 goals in the season. Okay. I think 91 for club.
One more
country.
Thing on the Messi thing is the impact on Spain as well, because they've probably been the best international team of all time, definitely of the last 20, 30 years.
Yeah,
obviously won three major titles back to back, having never won anything. And the way they played was obviously all built around how Barcelona were playing pretty much at the time.
Yeah.
Their starting 11 in the World Cup 2010 had what, 8 Barcelona players?
6, I think, because maybe 7.
And then Alba and Villa on top. And then they played a false 9 at Euro 2012, which was obviously
from Barcelona,
built around how Barcelona were playing. There were slight tweaks with Iniesta playing slightly higher and things like that, but it was sort of centred around how Barcelona were playing.
Yeah, and that
without Messi,
happened.
Then maybe that wouldn't have happened.
Well, because the dominance would have come quicker, so it would have been too late for Xavi, Iniesta and that lot to peak at the right time for Spain. Yeah, so you're right, that even that would have been different. So and then without Spain winning it, Germany don't have a blueprint to go for to win their World Cup.
And no one wins the World Cup. I mean, we're saying there would have been no World Cup winners without Lionel Messi. Crazy.
Yes.
Just to finalise the point of Messi.
Yeah.
Again, for just number wise.
Yeah.
For
yeah,
a squawk
yeah.
talker. Here's a present for everyone. So he obviously bought up his 700th game during 2019 at the end of the decade. And obviously that's not across the decade, but it was senior club career for Lionel Messi. And this was on the 27th of November. So he's obviously added more to this.
Yeah.
700 games,
mm-hmm.
613 goals, and 237 assists.
Yeah.
Quite simply, the best.
Saying he's as good as who I'm going to say. He reminds you of Messi, the scampering way he plays. He gives me the Messi vibe. He's short, his style. He's got a Messi vibe. Not my words. Those are the words. That's for Fartree. Those are the words of Ian Wright, who said this about Mohamed Salah in 2018 after he scored twice, absolutely sent Harry Maguire for one of them against Leicester City. Firstly, why is my favourite is skill. This is just based purely on the eye test rather than, well, a little bit on the statistics. One of my favourite situations of football is the tension created when a player has the ability to hold onto the ball in the opponent's penalty area under like heavy pressure from defenders through like sheer concentration, close control. But only when the tension's broken with a goal, an actual goal. And Salah scores a lot of goals that way. And one nice little statistical insight on this is that since returning to English football, he, along with Raheem Sterling, is one of only two players to have over 700 touches in the opposition's box. Everyone else is miles behind, with in like the mid-500s or lower. Secondly, his personality treads, I think, a fine line between arrogance and humility that all top athletes that come across as a bit more personal will have.
There's the thirst straps as well, isn't there, on Instagram? But then also he's very nice and smiley and humble.
Yeah, I think like the arms spread celebration that he adopted at the point where he knew he was pretty good, like sort of a couple months into that season when he comes back to Liverpool. That smacks of a bit of ego, but in generally all of the respect, he seems like quite a nice person. His record reliability, which I'll do a bit more of a breakdown of later, obviously refers to the 2017-18 season. And his story arc, I think. I can't remember a player who went from cultish, a cultish individual who was like destined to become pub quiz fodder, go to become an iconic individual in such a short space of time. And I use the term pub quiz fodder because, well, for two reasons. The first of which is that, according to Wikipedia, he is the player who made way for Francesco Totti on what would be both of their final appearances for Roma. And the second one came with Chelsea, for whom obviously it didn't work out. I think you know what this is going to be.
I'm looking at Will, hoping that he'd bring it up, and now I know he's going to bring it up.
Some might also remember he scored the sixth goal in the 6-0 win, in which Kieran Gibbs was mistakenly sent off for Oxlade-Chamberlain. I've got a bit more on that later, so I won't go into that too deeply now.
You've got some more to
Which was
so he spent
Arsene Wenger's 1,000th game.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that later.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
I thought you. Yeah,
I'll do that in my "It's a Wonderful Life." What would happen if this player wasn't around? Bit, which I'll come to shortly. Which I'll come to in a moment, actually, because all I've got to say basically is that to wrap up this bit is he's he spent the first half of this decade and actually made his debut in 2010, so he fits quite neatly in this decade. He spent the first half of it kind of hanging around these iconic moments before signing for Liverpool in the blink of an eye, becoming an iconic player himself. So what would the world look like if Salah didn't exist? Firstly, Liverpool, based on what the BBC reported at the time, would have instead signed Gelson Martins from Sporting.
Oof.
Since then, he's only got 14 league goals across three different clubs, Sporting plus Atletico Monaco, and the four seasons.
I mean, you would assume that'd be more with Klopp, but still, it's a bit of a comeback.
Yeah, yeah, and certain chips falling
in
his favour, I guess.
Well, he was part of the Sporting team that had that crazy moment where everyone was cancelling their contract. So that's why he ended up going to... Monaco I think Atletico got him for free, but then he wasn't very good, etc. So
it's conceivable that without Salah, Liverpool don't get to that Champions League final, which kind of that was their arrival as a big club. I think Klopp gave a good quote after that where he said, "We're finally ready to compete with all the big clubs." I'm misphrasing that slightly, but oh well.
It's Christmas.
Yeah, so
no need for accuracy.
Time for generosity. And so if they don't get to that Champions League final, then Klopp perseveres with Loris Karius, because that Champions League final, Klopp's a manager who stands by his players. He has more patience than often his fans.
And to be fair, Karius actually had a good season up to that point.
Yeah, in the Premier League, he was really, really good. He was just in the Champions League. So he perseveres with Karius. They don't sign Alisson, who we've seen in the recent games, the Club World Cup, the game against Monterrey, certainly how important he was. Also, against, I think, Bournemouth, or maybe it was Watford, actually. Yeah, Watford, he was super good in that game.
And obviously, the Champions League final, in which they won.
Yeah,
and he kept a great clean sheet.
Yeah.
And he made eight saves, which would be the most this decade. Fits nicely. Obviously, Van der Sar obviously did eight.
Same. Van der Sar did eight at Wembley, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it's. But
Alisson won.
Yeah, Alisson won.
And kept a clean sheet.
Yeah, Van der Sar let three goals in. Yeah. So.
And as promised on the. Arsene Wenger's experience.
I got too excited.
Even before joining Liverpool, scored quite a historic goal in what was Wenger's 1,000th game in the 71st minute to create that 6-0 scoreline that represents Chelsea's biggest ever win over Arsenal and equaled Wenger's heaviest ever margin of defeat, which was, we probably know, is the 8-2 loss to Manchester United. Being the only
thanks,
only
Will.
So Wenger would probably be a little bit happier.
Marginally.
Wenger would still be in charge.
And then finally, we've kind of agreed a structure to these. And the last bit is Salah summed up in one stat. And I think has to be the fact that he holds the record for the most goals scored within a single 38-game Premier League season with 32. And he overtook Luis Suarez in 2013-14, Cristiano Ronaldo, few years before that in his penultimate season with Manchester United.
Yeah, 7-8.
His last one. Yeah. And then Alan Shearer, of course. Alan Shearer being like the iconic post-2010 player of the Premier League, probably, maybe going back a little bit further. And there are a few more elements that if you dig a little bit deeper, are also impressive about this. He failed to score in only 11 of the 38 games that season and assisted 10 goals. I think that's a record as well for scoring in the most individual games. Mm. So it wasn't like he sort of... He made hay while the sun shined.
He didn't Berbatov
against,
it.
Yeah.
Four against Blackburn.
And it wasn't overly because of the creative players supporting him. According to Opta, he outperformed his XG by 8 goals that season, which is more than any other player. And it wasn't because the Premier League defences took that season off. I think across all of Europe's top five leagues that season, only the Bundesliga had a stronger defensive record in terms of the average number of goals each team in the division conceded. And if he wins the Golden Boot this season, which is... a bit of a stretch considering how far ahead Jamie Vardy is. But if Jamie Vardy gets injured or tails off, the closest competitors around him are only 2 goals ahead on 11. Salah's now on 9 after scoring a couple of times recently. But if he does improbably mount a surge up the rankings table in that respect, then he'll equal a record currently held jointly between, I think, Alan Shearer and Thierry Henry for winning 3 consecutive Premier League Golden Boots.
it's been amazing to watch, because I mean, I was a fan of his back when he was at Basel, and I remember saying that, oh, as soon as this guy learns to finish, he'll be amazing. And I never really truly believed that he'd ever learned to finish, because you watched him and his movement was always amazing. He'd always find himself in goal scoring positions and then he'd just whiff the shots. Like, he should have knocked Real Madrid out of the Champions League 2015-16. He had like two sitters at the Bernabeu. Dzeko had two as well, and he missed them, and you're thinking, if he could just finish, he'd be such a player. And I came to Liverpool and I thought, and you remember he started that season 17-18 missing loads of chances. You're thinking, if he could just finish, he'd be so good. And then Coutinho left. He sort of took it like, I was like, okay, I've got to step up now.
Yeah.
And he did. And it was just, he's been lights out since then.
The thing about him in those early days was just the like raw, electrifying pace, wasn't it? That just tore apart defences. Yeah. But when he got there, it was all very hurried in the end. And he's kind of, he's basically just adapted his game to become a finisher, a wide forward, rather than just a out-and-out rapid winger.
I would argue he still shows signs of that inability to finish, quote unquote. In a recent game, I think it scored the most difficult of the chances, which shows his incredible ability as a footballer, fluffed his lines on numerous occasions, which is, this isn't, that doesn't no, just no. apply to Mohamed Salah, but it's sort of like became that shot in recent games as well. His shot production has just absolutely exploded again, and it's someone that can consistently create space for themselves to fire a shot at goal, which in itself is an ability that not many players have. And you mentioned the speed at which Salah operates. Look at the strength as well, because he's one of the... I can't get my head around...
I think you need to explain that reference.
No, if you have to explain the reference, it's not good, as you two always learn with me.
That's true.
The reference loses its... But my point is that he's formed one of the most chiseled physiques in football, of which Mo, you alluded to on Instagram. He does like to rub in our face sometimes. But his ability to hold off a player, turn, and then use, as you mentioned, Will, the ability to just create inches within a tighter space is the perfect marriage of that speed and that strength. And then, as you said, at the end of the decade, blossomed into the technique and the finishing ability.
I actually want to give a couple examples of those. Because first of which is the Watford one that created quite an iconic photo. Like, I think, I don't know if it's Cruyff or Messi who has that photo, or it might be Iniesta who has that photo where there's like 10 defenders
There's one of Messi, one of Cruyff, one of Maradona. They're all, they've got context to them. But
Salah has one.
One of me as well.
Salah has one where he does a feint while turning in the box, and there are four Watford defenders, and it almost looks synchronized because they've all slid to try and block what they thought was going to be a shot at the same time in like a quite a nice diagonal row. So that's one of what I mean, is like when a player can hold onto the ball and just sort of like feint, and it happens because the defenders are terrified of giving away a penalty or missing the moment where the striker releases the ball, but they know how dangerous the position is.
It's like Wright says, it's Messi-esque the way he moves.
Yeah, exactly. And the second one is one that came away to Porto, where it just ricochets off someone, and he basically juggles the ball with his shoulder and head before like just calmly slotting it away. You might remember that one, but if not, go on YouTube and watch all 48 goals scored by Mohamed Salah in the 2017-18 season.
Which I did several times before this. Moving on from two left-footed wing wizards, we now go to Oliver Young-Miles, who will deliver his favourite footballer.
Another wizard.
Actually. Eric Lamela, right?
Of the decade.
Do you know what?
Right, reschedule.
Should have gone with it, maybe.
I was just saying to follow the pattern of left-footed playmakers.
Who will listeners be feasting on now?
So I've gone for Harry Kane, who I think is quite a nice one if we're talking about this whole decade, just in terms of where he started it and where he is now. It's quite nice to sort of see the progression from when he was a chubby 16-year-old in 2010. There were sort of, well, big question marks about whether he'd make it. He signed his first professional contract in 2010 and has gone on to become England captain, break numerous records along the way for Spurs. And just developed into one of the best out-and-out strikers in the world, which I don't think anyone really could have envisaged. There's been a few people that have popped up Tim Sherwood, to have said that he would go on to become a great Premier League striker. But when you look at his early career, I don't think anyone can really say that with too much confidence. He had four loan spells away from Spurs. This was pre-Pochettino, when he really clamped down on players leaving Tottenham on loan because he wanted to keep them in-house and develop them. Before that, a lot of players went out on loan, and Kane was one of them. His first two loan spells went really well in 2011-12, I think, with Leyton Orient and Millwall. But then 2012-13, he had a really dreadful time. He went to Norwich City in the Premier League for the first half of the season, played three games, didn't score, barely got on the bench for them, and then went to Leicester City in the Championship. And there's that famous picture, I think everyone would have seen it by now, but it's Kane, Vardy and Drinkwater sitting on the bench in that iconic Leicester-Watford playoff semi-final, the Deeney one. They're all sitting on the bench. And when you look at his record for Leicester, he got 2 goals in 15 games. So you can't really dispute that. But I think basically what I'm getting at here is that he's gone from that to going on to do all that he has done.
When he started just coming into the Spurs team, when they started using him, he was like a kind of, I think you've said before, he was a meme, basically. Mm. He was like, it kind of happened with Sissoko, maybe not so much now, but in previous seasons, where it's like, you'll say Harry Kane for Ballon d'Or. And
it was like Will Craig, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But I mean, I joked about Sherwood there, but in fairness, he does deserve a bit of credit because he was the one that sort of gave Kane a few opportunities. But I think at the time, there was a lot of skepticism around that because I remember when Sherwood first got the job, his first thing that he did was promote Nabil Bentaleb and stick him in the team. And when he started doing that with Kane, people were like, okay, right, his whole thing is bringing through players and he's trying to get the job that way by
trying to win a popularity contest.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And a lot of people thought at the time that ability-wise, Kane probably didn't deserve to be in there. He got a few goals by the end of that season, but by the start of the 2014-15 season, he was behind Adebayor and Soldado and Pochettino's plans. Which sort of shows that he was, I mean, which sounds mental when you think about it.
Adebayor, I can perfectly understand, but, and even Soldado was crazy good.
Yeah. Soldado is either Goldado or Loldado, basically. And for Spurs,
but then
unfortunately,
at Spurs,
he was Loldado.
Never, ever.
He was Loldado at Spurs. Yeah, he wasn't Goldado.
And I don't know if you're going to get onto this, but I'll mention it now because we've mentioned Soldado. Harry Kane, during this decade, became the first fastest player to reach 20 Champions League goals, doing it in 25 matches.
Mm.
It was Roberto Soldado's record
that
he broke alongside Van Nistelrooy, I think.
Well,
so
there you go.
There's some Christmas narrative.
Yeah.
So, Charles Dickens should have wrote about that.
So yeah, that season he was firmly third choice. He actually played a pivotal role in the first ever goal of the Pochettino era. He dribbled around Adrian, I think it was, against West Ham. He played it through, to Eric Dier, who dribbled around Adrian and scored.
Wow.
So he got the assist. He got the assist in Poch's first ever game. And yeah, basically his big moments came at crucial times for Poch, as we'll get into. But he basically forced his way into the team through his good performances in Europa League. He got a hat-trick in a game where he ended up in goal and comically let in a really tame free kick.
The funny story is, I know the guy who discovered Kane, where because he coaches my son, and his story is basically when he first met Kane, when Kane was a boy, he put Kane in goal because he was like, I need a boy to go in goal, and Kane was like, I'll do it. And
Big lad.
Yeah, and
Kane
volunteered, and apparently it was actually pretty good. Yeah. And then he got told, no, he's outfield, he's not in goal. And he thought, oh, okay, that was annoying because a lot of kids at that age don't want to go in goal. And then Kane went outfield and just started scoring goal after goal. I was like, oh, hang on a minute, I've got a player here.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a similar sort of thing. Like in terms of he was firmly third choice in the pecking order, and through the dreadfulness of Adebayor and Soldado ahead of him in the Premier League and his own exploits in the Europa League, he eventually got his chance. And then from then on, Spurs started the next season and he was the only striker. So he'd gone from 3-1 with no backup, which is another thing entirely. But then, yeah, and then since then, he's the third highest scorer in Spurs' history behind Bobby Smith and Jimmy Greaves, both of whom set those records in the 50s and 60s, which shows, I mean, he's done it in 5 years, which is pretty remarkable.
Mm.
179 goals and 272 appearances for Spurs. He's the all-time leading goal scorer for the club in European competitions with 30 and 55. And he broke Jermaine Defoe's record. And Defoe's record is pretty much exclusively against very bottom-of-the-barrel
I knew which term you were going to use there, but we wanted to avoid
that. So there's that. Sixth in England's all-time record books with 32. So, I mean, Rooney's 52, is he? 52, yeah. I think Rooney is.
Yeah, he's got to have that in his sights, right?
And of the five players above him, only Jimmy Greaves, again, has a better strike rate. He had 0.77 goals per game to Kane's 0.71. So, I mean, it's pretty impressive strike rate there.
His record in the Premier League is such that he's... And it makes it quite frustrating that he seems to be slowing down in terms of goals output.
Yeah.
But we used to, it's the prospect of him like rivaling Alan Shearer's record, which is seems untouchable. I think it's like 260 goals. Yeah. Wayne Rooney seemed like he might be able to do it, but then he slowed down, tailed off.
Harry Kane's still...
he's got like, he's still at an age where it's conceivable that. If he plays into his 30s, he could do it. And I think that's a real testament.
Kane, 100%. I mean, just to start out, the thing about Kane that really enthuses me is that I think he's going to get better. I think as good as he is now, he's the kind of... He's never really had pace, right? That's never been his game. But I think what he's got is that sort of positional awareness. And I think that kind of like Sheringham, kind of like Zlatan Ibrahimovic, if you watch when they turned 30, something just clicked because their positional game became so attuned. They knew exactly what to do, and that whole first 5 yards is in their head thing, it really becomes a true thing. And I think when Kane, if as long as he stays in the Premier League, I think he'll break Kier's record no problem, because I think he will. I think he'll break it.
Which is bonkers in itself. He's one of only five players in Premier League history to have scored 20 plus goals in 3 consecutive seasons, yeah, alongside Alan Shearer, Thierry Henry, Van Nistelrooy, and Sergio Aguero. I think this would be his fifth, or has he already broken the 20? I can't remember. Basically, I think there was one season where those injuries caught up with him and he maybe fell below 20.
I think he's got 20 every season, hasn't he? Since his breakthrough one.
Maybe I'm just sort of realising back when I thought, oh, Harry Kane might not do it. But then obviously he loved playing the last two games of the season, scoring yeah, 9 in those ones.
That Leicester City in Hull records to overhaul, yeah, Lukaku.
Yeah. But he's got the most goals ever in North London derbies as well. That's one way. And obviously Harry
Kane... His London derby record is great. Overall,
and the famous thing about Harry Kane of when he's got the Arsenal shirt and the red streak through his hair, etc., is always thrown about when Spurs sing "He's one of our own," and then Arsenal fans tout back.
Yeah, but Arsenal released him because he was chubby. His eight.
But what I'm saying is that again, that's pays tribute to.
We spoke about Salah's
transformation in terms of maybe more technically. He was always fast and always had that skill set that he thought was going to go well. Harry Kane, numerous podcasts. We speak about how every year he adds something else to his game. And as you said, didn't look like the most athletic striker, and he'll probably admit that. And now he's one of the strongest, biggest, most difficult strikers to play against. And can also pass the ball 95 yards on a sixpence.
This is the thing that we were talking about with Messi and Ronaldo, that whole debate which centres around one of them had that innate ability in Messi and one of them has worked at it. And I think Kane, obviously we've discussed the merits and otherwise of that, but I think Kane is one of those that you look at, and obviously the work that he's put in, he's the classic sort of gets in first, leaves last type player, in that he's worked at his body and got to this point in his game where he is one of the best strikers in the world. Mm. I mean, at Spurs, he was highly regarded in a technical sense, but there was issues with his body shape and his lack of pace and mobility when he was coming through the ranks, and he often played as a 10 in Spurs youth teams before sort of streamlining himself and becoming the striker that we know he is now. But I think as well, what we're always talking about in terms of how he's adapting his game and you as well, Jake, is right, because when he came through, he was pretty much a pure 9. You know, I was looking at his shooting stats, and I have to admit, I kind of missed this Kane, because he was just like unloading shot after shot. And that 2017-18 season, which we talked about in terms of Salah, Kane had the most shots in the Premier League that season with 188.
Yeah.
And Salah had 148, I think. And then no one else got near 100. Well, everyone else was below 100.
And remember in 2017, everyone's favourite stat, Harry Kane broke Alan Shearer's calendar year record.
Oh, this is what I was going to get onto. This is what I was getting to. You need to stop doing this. Well, because we wanted to have an
organic sort of like, for everyone's picks and and enjoy the stories. I'm getting excited and thinking, I can contribute here.
What I was going to say is...
This is the equivalent of like unwrapping someone else's present.
I'm the Grinch, really.
Stealing the extra pigs in blanket. But he's gone from that to a sort of more rounded forward who likes to drop in deep and link the play and all these kind of things. And I don't know whether that is I think that is part of him trying to become a more complete striker, but I also think maybe it's down to the fact he's had 5 ankle injuries in three and a bit years, and like Shearer's sort of had to adapt because he's not as dynamic maybe as before. But
yeah, because Shearer was like a playmaker before, wasn't he?
Yeah, but I think the fact that he's managed to, he's still one of the best strikers in the world when he's not physically at his peak at the moment, I think is testament to the work that he's put in.
I mean, you look at Kane really in the last, let's say, 3-4 years, and you would only have put Suarez and Lewandowski above him, and you wouldn't put Suarez above him now. It's only really Lewandowski.
Wouldn't be a squawk at all. Luis Suarez slander. Feliz Navidad.
It's not slander. It's not slander if it's true, Jake. You know, and you look at Lewandowski. Lewandowski obviously is having this bonkers season, but you know, the fact that Kane, who like you said has come from nowhere, to be literally and genuinely among the top three or four strikers in the world for like the better part of half a decade, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And he, you know, and he does it. He seems, for all accounts, to be a lovely bloke, which I think that has to factor into something. It's nice to see nice people do well. He stands up. He seems to be a good captain as well for England with the recent issues they've had with racism and that. He stood up for his teammates. He supported them. You know, so he seems to be a lovely bloke as well as all that, which is always nice, I think. And I mean, and then yeah, he's just brilliant. And the fact that he can still score goals, like you said, at the rate that he does, even though he's playing basically as a 10 now, or a false 9 or whatever.
I mean, he's still got 9 and 16, I think, in the Premier League. I mean, it's below his normal sort of goals per game ratio, but again, it's still, I mean, we're talking Salah. Salah's on 9 as well, so he's going to build on that.
We mentioned Ronaldo, Messi skewing statistics to think that that's not very good. Harry Kane's season this season, he's a victim of his own goal scoring record, because 9 in 16,
1 in 2,
what are you doing?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
really, 9 in 16, really strong still for any striker, just not 20 in 20, which he usually posts.
Yeah. And then just before I get on to what would the world have looked like without a Harry Kane, which would have been horrible, just like rattle into a few of the records that we all know, but it's worth sort of reiterating. 2 Premier League Golden Boots, 4-time PFA Team of the Year inductee, World Cup Golden Boot winner. Second England World Cup Golden Boot winner since Lineker. England captain and Spurs captain and all but a name. I mean, Lloris is captain, but Harry Kane is basically the captain. So to have achieved all that by 26 is... it's pretty good going, especially when at 21, his career didn't seem to be, or 2021, didn't seem to be going peak. Particularly.
And that's the thing, I think, anyway. Even I forget, when you say 26, I'm like, whoa, he's got ages left, if the fitness...
And he is one of those that he's never been lightning. So, I mean, you can see him sort of going.
He might dip 27 to 29 where he's fighting with the, I still want to run as much as I did. And then all of a sudden, bang, I'm just going to stand, shoot and deliver.
Yeah, look at Zlatan Ibrahimovic's career post-30 is light years better than his career pre-30. And it's going to be the same for Kane.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic is also a medical marvel in the fact that he had a cruciate ligament at 36.
Yeah.
And then scored a kung fu.
He is basically
kick.
A cyborg. That is true.
So what would the world have looked like? I was just going to go with a quote from Pochettino to start with. This is from 2017. Pochettino said, "I can find many other goals that were fantastic, but for me, goals are related to emotion, to the period you are living in. For me, that goal was an amazing goal because it meant for us, for everyone, the possibility to stay here today." The goal he was talking about was Kane's, I'm pretty sure, his only ever successful free kick, which he loves taking him and he's not very good at him, but his one successful free kick, which took a huge deflection against Aston Villa, deceiving Brad Guzan in goal.
Doesn't take much.
So yeah, that was November 2014, three or four months into Pochettino's reign at Spurs. And basically that won the game for Spurs. He came off the bench and won it 2-1. And Pochettino says that if Kane hadn't scored that goal, he would have been sacked. So obviously we reached the end point with Pochettino recently, which was devastating. But a Pochettino-less Tottenham would never have got to where they did get the Champions League final. Yeah, from that point to... Yeah, okay. There it is.
They'd never be in a position where they could hire Jose Mourinho.
They would never have
been Jose Mourinho in this
Grant
guise.
Daniel Levy's one wish of appointing Jose Mourinho.
I mean, Spurs should have won something, but obviously they haven't. But they wouldn't have been in a position to challenge twice in the Premier League title or reach the Champions League final without Pochettino and without Kane's goal.
Arsenal.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, we'd sort of take that for granted.
No, and that's what I mean. So I'll also make a joke, but then I'll also say maybe the one man, as I said, most goals in North London derbies has supercharged their usurpation of North London.
Because the stat was that Arsenal were the only team in the Premier League that they hadn't finished above competition's history.
Because I recently, to do the Arteta stuff, his final game for Arsenal was a 4-0 win against Aston Villa. And it meant that Arsenal leapfrogged Tottenham into second, and it was obviously you were not happy that day. I get muddled with years. That in itself, I remember everyone being like, still Arsenal finish above, but then Harry Kane's gone, right, enough of that, 30 goals a season from me and we will finish above you.
That's what I mean. I mean, without Kane, Spurs never would have got to the point where they're regular top four finishers and challenging for league titles and things like that. And I think the club's sketchy transfer record in terms of buying strikers sort of demonstrates how much of an issue they would have had. And even talking about Soldado and Adebayor was great on loan. And as soon as he got the contract, he did the Adebayor thing of not caring anymore. And Soldado, great player as he was in La Liga, just didn't adapt to the Premier League. But along with those two, you've got Rebrov, Postiga, Janssen. The list goes on and on and on.
Tottenham would essentially be West Ham if Harry Kane didn't exist. Yeah, the classic Golden Sullivan.
If Spurs didn't have one of the best strikers in the world, they wouldn't have been able to keep Eriksen and Dele Alli and people like this. They wouldn't be as good because they wouldn't have had a player to feed off like Kane.
Or a coach like Poch.
Well, Christian Eriksen and Harry Kane are in the top five for best goal assist to goal scorer combos. It might be direct combination or it's genuinely Eriksen to Kane.
Yeah.
So without Kane, maybe Eriksen doesn't get 10 assists in 5 consecutive seasons and his career doesn't look as good as well. So with strikers, obviously the assist metric in itself is intertwined with who you're creating the chance for. And when you're playing with someone like Harry Kane, same with as people say about Mesut Ozil with Ronaldo, you change your striker and all of a sudden you don't look as good. So Harry Kane, not just giving Spurs a career, also his teammates potentially as well.
Yeah, and just a final point, where would England be as well? I think a scary thing to think about is that if there was no Kane, there wasn't really another number nine. Maybe Jamie Vardy would have played more, but England's whole style has been built around Kane as a focal point and runners off him, Rashford and Sterling and Jadon Sancho more recently.
Well, I was going to say,
if there's no Kane, Wayne Rooney's career probably gets prolonged.
Oh God!
The development of younger players doesn't come through. England don't get to the semi-finals of a World Cup without a Golden Boot winning striker. I know there's been a lot of talk about his performances tailed off, which they probably did. But I mean, still, he's a Golden Boot winner at a World Cup. You can't sort of take that away from him.
The one, what would the world look like? Could also be. We would have had a striker that squared it to. Which again is, as I said, as you've mentioned, we needed his goals to get there. So that is sort of in jest. And that's what's taken for granted, is it? That one specific moment. You forget that, as you've spoken about with all those stats, Harry Kane transformed himself in an entire decade to become one of the most complete forwards. And as a Spurs fan, it's no surprise that he was your favourite. Games, 116 goals and 59 assists, and that's all before Kylian Mbappe's 21st birthday. Anyone that knows me or follows me on Twitter may have assumed that the young French prodigy would be my favourite player of the decade, which almost seems a bit silly considering he made his debut as a 16-year-old in 2016. So he's not even played half of the decade. I was going to choose someone like Olivier Giroud, who I actually made a Twitter moment about all the times I tweeted about him. as an Arsenal fan, Olivier Giroud was one of my favourites. Santi Cazorla was also mentioned in someone that is just pure magic to watch and filled me with joy throughout this decade of football. But special affinity to Kylian Mbappe. One, because he has become a phenomenal talent. One of the few articles I've actually written for Squawker was based on a deep dive of research based on the fact that his 2017 year, he scored 32 goals, I'm confident it was, which was the most by a player under the age of 21 since Ronaldo R9. And he was doing that for, again, you can say what you want about Ligue 1 and the Dutch Eredivisie back then. But basically, the level of scoring that we've seen from Mbappe at his age has not been seen since arguably the best young striker in football history.
Well, there's also, but this is, as I say, there's the other best young striker in football history is Pele, which, yeah. And he's also equal Pele records as well, isn't he?
Exactly. Kylian Mbappe, in his short career, has helped Monaco win their first Ligue 1 title since 2000. Became the first player ever, whilst a teenager, to score in the first four knockout Champions League games of a career. Famously blitzing past Pep Guardiola's Man City, doing the same against Borussia Dortmund, knee sliding in front of the yellow wall. Someone as well, the reason why I love Mbappe so much is not because of his footballing ability. What we've been sort of mentioning about Salah, especially on Instagram, or having the confidence and the ego, but maybe even a brand. Kylian Mbappe has sort of developed an iconic celebration even before he turned 20. The folded arms. I don't know whether it was him originally that did it, but
it's the B-boy stance, isn't it?
Yeah, he put that into the limelight. The same way you see Cristiano Ronaldo.
Teenagers are copying that now.
Like, exactly.
Like younger footballers than him are starting to do it.
Starting to do it, and it's someone like you see people doing the Ronaldo celebration. I know James Ward-Prowse did it in a recent game, and people identify that. You see people crossing their arms in that nonchalant, confident fashion.
Run DMC, mate. It's the Run DMC.
You think of Mbappe probably never even watched it.
Probably,
him.
Yeah.
He thinks he's original. And as well, as I said, he's won the trophies to go with it, which I'm so pleased for, because the one thing that is sort of redundant about football in terms of enjoying someone's pure ability to play the sport is there will always be a side-running narrative of what did they achieve and what did they do. Mbappe, whether you feel like he should be doing it somewhere else by now, he's, as I said, he would have turned 21 by the time this is coming out, but before that 21st birthday, he is a World Cup winner already. There, he can no longer be sort of slapped with that stick of
scored in the final. First teenager to score in the final since Pele.
Do you want to do the Mbappe section? You're reeling out all
the stats.
You deserve that, Jake. Sorry.
So yeah, I've
you had it coming.
I do. So any more, and that's the thing. You all know the stats, so you know he's good.
Yeah.
And again, when I first started working at Squawker, Mbappe was someone that was following. I watched him for the France under 19 Euros, and was sort of like, this kid is just so fun to watch.
I remember you were hyping him up.
He was the youngest player there in that tournament, and I kept tweeting about him on the account when I was on shift, and sort of the people I was working with was like, you might want to tone that down rather than updating it every week. Just wait until he keeps going. And then he kept doing it, and the obsession with following that stuff has led to me creating a whole document of every goal he's ever scored in his career. That's why I know how many minutes per...
I remember your reaction when the 1670 broke out for 1670 for Monaco. You were just like, everyone's like, eh, I told you so. We were just like,
Goal against Manchester City was on my birthday. I was in the office working the game. Yeah. He scored that.
I remember.
And ever since then, and as I said, even before then, the fascination with someone that is so lightning quick but can have so much flair and just seems to enjoy playing football so much is infectious to watch. And it also helps that he scores at a ridiculous rate. And ahead of his birthday, I looked at sort of 10, some are legends of the game, some are modern greats, and some are sort of contemporaries, and just wanted to compare how many goals he'd scored, how many games he'd played compared to some of those at the age of 21. When all these players 21, Cristiano Ronaldo, who we spoke about,
yeah.
182 games and 36 goals by his 21st birthday. Obviously exploded since then.
Just a bit.
Karim Benzema, who, again, when he emerged, was one of the few teenagers to score in his first five games. Only Haaland has done that in the Champions League
since
then.
He was the previous French prodigy striker.
Exactly. And then, obviously, because he hasn't played for France for so long, you forget that Benzema's got 81 odd caps for that France team. So had the chance to win them in the World Cup, etc., as Mbappe has done. 143 games, 62 goals for him. As I mentioned, Mbappe 199 and 116. Lionel Messi 140 games, 51 goals. Mbappe's more than that. Marcus Rashford, who people forget that he's still quite young and is still probably finding his way, was a super sub for the first bit, as Mbappe was. He was playing 20-minute spurts and scoring two goals pretty much every time. Marcus Rashford's record is impressive, 162 games, 38 goals. Michael Owen, 156 games, 76 goals. Neymar, 227 games because of the Brazilian state championship and obviously his talent, 140 goals. Thierry Henry, who Kylian Mbappe broke numerous records when he was at Monaco. Henry was the youngest scorer, the youngest player. Mbappe broke them both. Mm-hmm. 134 games and 31 goals. Wayne Rooney, 212 games and 66 goals. It's no wonder he burned out so early. And then Ronaldo, R9, as I said, 185 games and 167 goals when he turned 21. And as I said, we've not seen scoring like this since Ronaldo. Ronaldo's rate is not being bettered by Mbappe, but Mbappe produces a goal or assist every 75 minutes on average for club and country in his senior career, which is obscene. And the only sort of worry or concern or why I wanted to bring him up as sort of my favourite player of this decade is there are some cautionary tales in that list.
Just a few,
Ronaldo's record, as I said, the best. Because of how brilliant he was on the ball, Mbappe, if you watch Mbappe dribble his speed there against Argentina in the World Cup, thing and won a penalty just through pure speed and ability to control the ball at that pace.
My son has watched that highlight video about 67 times.
It was Heung-min Son-esque.
Heung-min Son could only dream, my friend.
He's copying Kylian Mbappe. And then there's a famous goal he scored against Lille where there was no goalkeeper, but rather than shooting from the halfway line, he just ran from the halfway line towards the goal. Again, you mentioned Mo Salah's celebration about putting your arms out. Mbappe's wingspan and his stride length in itself is extraordinary. When he puts his arms out,
very broad-shouldered.
It's not broad-shouldered, it's just his arms are so long, which is why sometimes he looks clumsy but can conjure up so much magic and why he has so much speed. But the cautionary tales there, as I said, is Michael Owen was one of England's greatest wonder kids, if you will. Wayne Rooney as well. Wayne Rooney's career was great. Michael Owen obviously won the Ballon d'Or, which Mbappe hasn't done yet. And I say yet confidently.
Oh, yeah, he's on course for one.
But you just hope that maybe he also gets a move to another club where the tarnishing of the Ligue 1 brush is just no longer there, because you want him to prove his talent. Liverpool fans are obviously excited about Mbappe 2020, and that it would break my heart to see him go to Liverpool, considering that Arsene Wenger, so unsurprisingly, admitted that there was one moment in which Arsenal may have signed Kylian Mbappe. But at the same time, I would absolutely love to see Kylian Mbappe, a player of his quality, play in the Premier League so I could watch it every week without an excuse. And also, if Liverpool play in their current style, it might not be long until Salah's record was then broken. I genuinely believe he's that talented, genuinely believe he's that good. And given the way the goal scoring is happening, I think we're having one of the highest scoring Premier League seasons ever anyway. If that trend continues, then Mbappe is on course to break more records than he already has.
Break Shearer's one?
It would be nice to see him.
Yeah, but Harry Kane has to worry.
But you know what? I think I like the fact that, almost like the fact that he's still at PSG, because he's a Parisian kid. He's from Paris. Yeah. So I'd love it if he made, because obviously the whole thing was Neymar was going to make PSG relevant. I'd love it if Mbappe made PSG relevant. Like, help them win a Champions League, help them get onto national stage and become the kind of team they want to be. Do you know what I mean? I think that would almost be better than him going to an established...
kind of overshadowed Neymar anyway.
Oh, he 100% has. 100%. Like, Neymar went there to get our Messi shadow. He's just gone into Mbappe's shadow. Yeah.
And through injuries as well. And we talk about Champions League then. Kylian Mbappe, as I said, that's when he exploded. And that's when everyone... Rio Ferdinand, I remember, used to keep saying, oh, it's illegal what he's doing on the pitch. There's no right for someone to be that fast and so explosive. And he broke Messi's record for the youngest player to reach 15 Champions League goals. He's the highest scoring teenager, breaking Patrick Kluivert's record for that. In his first 30 Champions League games, which is sort of done and dusted, that's until the knockout stages start again, was directly involved in 30 goals. His output in Ligue 1 is obviously obscene, but he's done it in the Champions League. Yes, they've gone out in some knockout stages, but people forget that his Champions League exploded in the knockout stages, in the most difficult of ties, against Pep Guardiola's Man City, against Borussia Dortmund, did it in Germany against them, and that was when he was 18 years old. Exactly, he was the first player to score against Buffon in that knockout stages, became the youngest scorer in a Champions League semi-final ever. It all culminated, obviously, as I said, in the World Cup. Mo, you mentioned the record. Second teenager after Pelé to score. France's first World Cup since they won it in 98 when Mbappe wasn't even born.
Yeah, literally he was born like months, few months after it, right?
That's the crazy thing. Yeah, in December, yeah. So he's moving on to the sort of theme of what would the world look like, and I've already summed him up in all of those stats, and during his birthday you would have seen loads of stuff that went out on Squawker on that as well. But in terms of what would the world look like, maybe it's difficult to say after 2 years of or 3 years of pure goal scoring output that he's had. It's not for the whole decade, but he's been an absolute joy to watch. And you could argue that France may not have won that World Cup without him and without his ability to transition in a flash, teleporting from one box to another.
So again, there'd be no World Cup winner.
No. So without Messi, without Mbappe, we need at least one of them to decide a World Cup winner.
I mean, 100% they wouldn't have won the World Cup, because if you look at France's game plan in that tournament, it was basically sit deep and then just hit it long to Kylian Mbappe. Mm. And okay, yeah, they had Ousmane Dembele, but Dembele's not as good a finisher as Mbappe.
And like, Dembele didn't play.
No, but I mean, he was in the squad, so I mean, he's as fast, so you could have talked to him, but he wouldn't finish the ball like Mbappe did. He wouldn't tear, because he's not a finisher, he's a winger, he's a creator. So there's no way they win the World Cup without Mbappe, 100%. And I would even argue, if they don't, obviously he doesn't show up, I think Real Madrid don't become obsessed with him, and then Real Madrid probably sign a striker, instead of waiting all summer 2016.
They bought Luka Jovic.
No. 2 years ago, I think they were trying to sign him, and then they waited all summer and then they didn't sign him, and then that's when they sold Morata. I think if they'd signed a striker that year, they might have actually gone on to continue to be good instead of just sort of tailing off like they did. So, I mean, so much.
The real Ronaldo, obviously there's that famous image of him with Cristiano Ronaldo having all the Ronaldo posters, and now everyone, including myself, has got Kylian Mbappe posters on their wall.
Obviously, there being only four of us, we can't cover the scope of the decade in terms of star names. So I sent a little email out to the Squawker, the writing team, earlier this week to get some honourable mentions. First up, Mohamed Moalim says Andres Iniesta, who he termed an artist in the age of athletes.
You can't argue with that. I mean,
typical wordsmith.
I was
going to
say that's so beautifully put. Yeah. I mean, I cry.
Yeah, he is great. Him and Xavi, of course. The one thing that ruled Xavi out, otherwise he would be my pick, was that he disappeared halfway through the decade to go play in Qatar. But Iniesta was there until like 2 years ago. Mm. Fantastic player.
And obviously that famous picture of him, final game in Barcelona, just sitting in the middle of the pitch.
Yeah,
is lovely. Is a lovely image of the decade.
Lovely player.
Starting it with obviously the goal in the World Cup final. Yeah. Steve Jennings, a Spurs fan, but not a Spurs fan who picked the same as Ollie. He went for Luka Modric. Despite rarely scoring or assisting and doing most of his work in the middle of pitch, he somehow seemed to win games on his own, particularly during Real Madrid's three-year domination of the Champions League. Few players can escape intense pressing like Modric. Mm-hmm. Interesting thing about him, he also has quite a cool story. I think his first year at Real Madrid, he was voted flop of the season.
Yeah, he wasn't good. But
that's quite the comeback.
And also, the only non-Messi or Ronaldo player to win the Ballon d'Or this decade, which is quite a feat as well.
Yeah, Luke, especially for that kind of player as well.
Yeah, now he's. I mean, we've started off with two artists. I love it. Modric is really beautiful to watch. I mean, in the recent Clasico, he produced the best man of the match with a beautiful pass. Just wonderful.
James Richards, who is here to remind us that there is football played in the lower leagues, gone for Kamal Roof. He's an Oxford United fan. Says that it's not only for the fact that he fired Oxford United back into the third tier for the first time in 16 years, but also because we plucked him from nowhere, proving once again that some players just need a break. He was obviously in Marcelo Bielsa's Leeds United team. You might have seen him most recently doing that, and he's gone to Anderlecht.
Yeah. Now working with Kompany.
Yeah, which isn't going too well.
This is a cool one. Ollie Thomas is a Crystal Palace fan, so you can guess who he's going to say.
Yeah.
But his Crystal Palace's story this decade is really cool, because they started it on the brink of administration. They finished it. I'm not sure where they are in the league table now, but they were obviously like
ahead of Arsenal.
Yeah. So he's gone for Wilfried Zaha, who is iconic in the sense that he was, I think, Sir Alex Ferguson's last Manchester United signing.
Yep.
Certainly among them. Didn't quite work out for him, so goes back to Palace and has remained there ever since. Ollie Thomas says of him that he has embodied Palace this decade and been with us from the very bottom, as I said, on the brink of administration, to the very top where they are now. He also points out his loyalty to Palace, despite always being linked with moves away and not always totally remaining silent on stuff like that. He has publicly said that he'll only go if Palace get a good deal, and that's quite refreshing to see.
Yeah, and also, again, Wilfried Zaha is someone that I love watching again, that talking about that just genuine joy of watching players.
He's magical.
Even when he said, oh, I would go, there's never been a question of then him putting in the same performances. And you see the way he talks about Crystal Palace afterwards, especially even that Brighton game.
That goal as well.
Exactly. And that's just him. We're talking about Messi and Hazard being top of the dribbles earlier on in the podcast. Zaha is the heir to that throne if he does stay in the Premier League, even beyond Crystal Palace.
He's you would have to say that the way football's consumed this decade, much of it's been through social media. And I don't know there's many Premier League players who generate the same little clips and gifs that we see that he does, like the way he sort of discombobulated Ashley Young, I think, in a fairly recent one. It was pretty cool. And also, one thing that I'm pulling out from Ollie's passage here is that he loves the fact that every single opposition fan hates him, yet they'd all want to have him.
Yeah,
and also his beef with Harry the Hornet's quite a funny little
the slice. Rivalry of the decade.
Harry Edwards says he's not the most exciting player to watch nor the best in his position, but Cesar Azpilicueta has been consistently good for about 6 or 7 years of the decade and will always perform at his best, whether he's playing left back, right back or centre back. And more people should be talking about how Chelsea signed him for just 8 million, given he's contributed to 2 Europa League wins, 2 Premier Leagues, a League Cup, an FA Cup.
Fun story about him. He was, at one point, an absolute flying wing back for Osasuna. Him and Monreal were playing on the same side. They were both absolutely incredible young talents. I was always hoping they'd get moves to really bit to maybe to Barcelona, around just really big Spanish clubs. And then obviously Monreal didn't get that. Then he went to Malaga and then went to Arsenal. And he's been great for Arsenal. He's gone back actually to Spain for Real Sociedad, playing very well. Azpilicueta went to Marseille and got a cruciate ligament injury. And it was like, oh, he's not going to come good then. Oh, that's a real shame because he was really special. And the fact that he's reinvented himself almost as like one of the best defensive fullbacks in the world is just it's a testament to him, to his ability and to just the willingness to work. Like we talked about earlier about players who have earned their status through working. I think Azpilicueta is a really good example because he was an attacking player and he's reinvented himself, and I think he deserves enormous credit for it.
And he's nicknamed Dave, which is really fun.
That's quite a nice little personality
and
feature.
The stat about him playing like consecutive minutes, like not missing a minute for like 3 seasons, especially of someone that suffered a knee injury, was bonkers in itself.
And then final one that I got, and I'm so glad someone said this, because we might get some hate mail if we don't mention quite a few players, but this guy in particular. Ben Green has gone with David Silva. Nice. He's an absolute no-brainer. The little Spanish genius has revolutionised Man City and made them the force they are today.
Ooh. Yaya Toure, please.
Ben's passage was quite long, so the signings of Pep Guardiola, Sergio Aguero and Vincent Kompany will go down in history as significant turning points in City's existence. But the biggest sea change has and perhaps always will be Silva, the true playmaker grandmaster. I like that point because...
That's not Mesut Ozil.
I like that point because there's probably... City, in this decade, no one's really transformed their club image quite like Man City have. No. I would think I can be quite confident in saying that.
No, you're right.
And David Silva, when we did our top 10 of City's players of all time, and there's really few clubs who are like winning titles that you can do a top 10 list and all the players in the top 5 are still currently active, but Manchester City just happened to be one of those kind of clubs. David Silva was our number one. I can't remember who wrote it initially. It was either you or Greg.
I think it was me, because I would have argued. I think David Silva's man. I don't want to dump on Ben's choice, but some respect for Yaya Toure. Some respect for Yaya Toure.
Happy Christmas,
please. Happy Christmas indeed, Yaya Toure.
I don't think he's disrespected.
No. He hasn't. But I just want to. I mean,
you can only pick one.
I just want to nominate. Yeah, just give a shout out to Yaya Toure because I mean, he won the FA Cup single handedly almost for 2010-11, breaking City's trophyless streak, and then he was a key figure in the league
one
title.
One of only two Premier League midfielders to score 20 yeah. goals.
But that's the nice thing about Silva, though. He came in 2010. He's going to leave in 2020. Yeah, that's nice. It bookends.
Yeah. Bookends no, I understand that. I think and
that's how you actually pick player of the decade, not a bloody 21-year-old that played two seasons.
David Silva is wonderful, though. I think, he's great to watch, and he's the way he's transitioned into a central midfielder under Pep. I mean, he's great to watch, and he's so important for City as well. You can see how when he's not at it, City miss his input and his quality. He's really good, really special.
Guardiola's when he came over spoke highly of Silva and said that he was very excited to coach him. That speaks volumes. And if we're going to do a sort of sliding doors, what if Silva wasn't a City moment? I know there's a few players, and it is really difficult name which Man City player is most important. You can definitely make a good case for Yaya Toure. You can definitely make a good case for Sergio Aguero. But does Guardiola go over to City if he doesn't have that sort of that David Silva type player there? I think these are questions.
We'll never
these are questions we'll never have the answer to, but they're worth thinking about. And we have saved the best until last. As I said at the beginning, a lot of you, thankfully, replied to the tweet asking about favourite players of the decade. So what we're going to do for the last part is discuss some of those picks. And starting with, and this is nice because it's Christmas, a couple of old squawker faces. Greg Johnson has said, besides the extremely obvious picks, which I think is Lionel Messi, etc., Robin van Persie.
Yeah.
Because still even now, even though he retired, because at his peak, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
11 moments pick, isn't he? That volley against Villa that won United the title. And one of my favourite goals of the decade was the Holland Spain one. The most unusual, brilliant goal that you'll see.
For 2 years in a row, he was the best striker in the Premier League and one of the best in the world. 11, 12, and 12, 13.
And it was nice that he finished at final as well.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. And they had a famous win. I think he got two goals against like PSV or something in one of those games. Won like a game 5-2. So even at like 38 years old.
Handsome man too.
And his left foot was one of the most handsome left feet in terms of technique. Bonkers striker. So again, you can't begrudge him that pick. Felix Keith, unsurprisingly. Ricky Lambert has a shout.
Yeah.
Which Southampton themselves have had an odd decade because there was the huge run into the Premier League and then established themselves. Obviously, it's famous that during the Champions League coverage last season, it was like, what if Southampton kept all these players? Dusan Tadic was in the semi-finals, Van Dijk, Mane.
Alderweireld.
I wish I could remember this stat, but I think that first season they came up into the Premier League, I don't know if it was 12-13 or 13-14, but he got double figures for both goals and assists that season. I think he was one of few.
It was just him and Gerrard, wasn't it? And then
that would have been the same season that Luis Suarez.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, so it might have just been those three, but it might have been like the only Englishman to do it.
Well, Gerrard's English.
The only English men to do it that season.
Oh, sorry.
That you're thinking of.
I thought
you said
the Englishman.
England goal with his first touch as well.
Yeah,
Scotland. Oh, yes. So again, what a game to do that.
Cult figure.
And as a Southampton fan, you're obviously going to have strong feelings. Another Southampton fan, Alex Stewart, has said Sadio Mane looked great in a fab RB Salzburg team, excited for Southampton, then got his big move and improved even further.
I mean,
like a lovely guy.
He's had the football manager career trajectory, isn't it? Like Salzburg to Southampton to... I mean, and he is like absolutely lovely. There's videos of him cleaning toilets in his local mosque. He's a genuinely lovely person. Like, and it's really good to see him have this kind of level of success that he's having right now. And I mean, Messi's loving him now. Messi's bigging him up. Yeah. So, it's like, I mean, what a way to end the decade.
And similar to the Salah trajectory as well of just getting better and better and better and then just becoming like, oh, wow, I'm a global force in football rather than just a good winger.
He's also got the record for fastest Premier League hat-trick, of course.
Of course.
I guess
so many little stats there. This is a nice one from Zuhair Fadul, and sorry if I'm pronouncing anything wrong here. Just sent a blue heart, a red heart, a kiss, and a picture of Marek Hamsik.
Ooh, I like that.
Which really like that. One of the guests, one of the best hair, or most recognisable, not maybe the best haircut, but
We were waiting so long for him to like break that Maradona record as Napoli's all time got top scorer, and he's like slow and steady won the race in that one.
And now Mertens.
The nice one with that, he was part of a famous front three at Napoli with Higuain. No, sorry, not with Higuain.
Cavani and Lavezzi.
And then was part of another famous front three with Mertens and Higuain and Callejon as well.
And then under Maurizio Sarri, it all became like, who's going to fill the Hamsik role? Who's going to fill the Hamsik role? Because you just had this two-footed genius playing in the middle of the pitch, able to score, pass, create. And speaking of two-footed geniuses, Jack Willey has just sent the gif of Santi Cazorla dancing in the middle of the Etihad. I mentioned him at the top of the podcast again.
Absolute magician.
One of the most likeable footballers, I think.
Sid Lowe can't point out how lovely he is, you know, understandably so. Fantastic guy from Oviedo. Real Oviedo, same with Juan Mata. They must do something up there. They make lovely footballers.
And nearly lost his whole ankle.
Yeah.
And is now only behind Lionel Messi for chances created and assists.
Recently played a stormer of a game at the Camp Nou. I mean, to come back from the injury to play is amazing enough. To come back and dominate.
The doctor told him it was up in the air whether he'd be able to walk again.
Yeah, and to play as well as he... And he's playing amazing.
Well.
Yeah.
He's
back in the Spain team, for goodness sake. He might make the Euros.
Yeah,
he's,
that and would be...
This is over a decade since he was, you know... He was robbed of the World Cup. Well, he was going to be part of their World Cup squad. He missed it through injury. He was part of the Euro squad, so he could go to 2020 Euros 12 years after being at Euro 2008. That's amazing, and he would deserve it. He's been incredible. Love Cazorla.
Chief_is_here, so the chief is here, and he's on the Squawker Talker. Has put a picture of King Conte. N'Golo Kanté.
Yeah, another lovely man. Another lovely man.
Just best smile of the decade, perhaps. And there's all of the videos of when France won the World Cup and Nzonzi having to physically give him the trophy so that he would celebrate it with it, because he's just refuses to take that limelight.
You might have to say that the most remarkable thing in football to happen this decade was Leicester City winning the Premier League title. And I think he got player of the season.
No, Mara's got player of the season, okay. But he was the engine of
the
other
one.
He got
player of the
year Chelsea, didn't he?
Well, yeah. I think he didn't not get the other
think,
one.
I don't think so. But the fact that he won it back-to-back with two teams, different teams, in his first two seasons in English football is just ridiculous. He's a sensei, and then won the World Cup.
Yep.
Like, I mean, what a player.
Yeah, crazy. Raul Asnani has put Thomas Müller, who again is sort of...
I mean...
Almost like the people's champion to
second,
an extent, because he's one of the players that you never think... Does he look good at football?
Second in assists behind Messi in the decade. So, you know, behind only Messi has more assists.
He's got like 11 this season out of nowhere.
He's just the wall pass king, man. You just give him the ball.
I guess as well, 2010 World Cup, he was Golden Boot. Was he Golden Boot or shared it? Young player.
Yeah.
Was
because it wasn't that with like three players.
He got five. He scored 10 goals at his first two World Cups. He struggled in 2018, unfortunately. But 2010, 2014, he scored five goals in each tournament. He was looking on course to break the record then.
Of course, there were two trebles won this decade. One was Barcelona, I believe.
In this decade, there's two. One was Inter, one was Bayern Munich. The Barca treble was technically... there's three trebles. Yeah, Barca won two.
Yes.
Forgot about that.
So we were both wrong.
Yeah. Yes, Barca won two trebles.
LFC_F666 has just posted a gif of Ibrahimovic. We mentioned him. About
what a man.
Again, in terms of continuity. Yeah.
Made PSG relevant, made Man United relevant for a brief while, then he got injured and Man United aren't relevant anymore. So.
Score of obscene goals such as the overhead kick against England. Was that this decade?
Yeah, pretty sure.
That was on Joe Hart.
Wilfried Zaha's one and only England cap.
Oh, yeah, of course. Wow. That's Ibrahimovic's true claim to fame.
Enrique Castillo has also mentioned Iniesta. We have Lelinho 25 doing an RVP gif. Captain SR4, unsurprisingly, has put a gif of Sergio Ramos.
I mean, look, man.
The villain of the decade, potentially.
I mean, four Champions Leagues in 5 years, three of which he was captain for.
World Cup, Euros.
Absolutely. I mean, look, not never the best defender, but like in terms of personality and winning personalities, unreal. Should have won the Ballon d'Or 2014. Was the man, I think only the second ever man, well, the first ever man to play in, win, and score in the Champions League semi-final, final, Club World Cup semi-final, and Club World Cup final in the same year. No one else has done that. Like, ridiculous, man.
Bonkers.
Ridiculous. And he's a defender, by the way.
We have another David Silva shout from Danny Motion, who I think works with Man City. So, obviously, as a Man City fan, choosing David Silva gives claim to Ben's passage about him being iconic in that sense. Jerry Gosens has put a gif of Iron Robin, who again, almost like a sad, but still incredible given the injuries he had. But
won the treble,
the Champions League winning goal. Yeah. But yeah, he bounced back from that 2012 where he was the bad guy, wasn't he? And then he was the hero the next year. And also again that Spain game,
and that tore
Casillas apart, didn't he?
That's what the gif is of, is from that Neverland game. Yeah. Joe Huxley, who's been doing graphics for us at Squawker, has put Charles Nzogbia. He's a Wigan fan, so he resonates strongly there. Probably the only one that was going to put Charles Nzogbia to that, but nevertheless, worth a mention.
The thing I remember about him is when he tore Arsenal apart in that 3-2.
Oh my God. It's just all about cheers for the presents, guys. We had loads more, obviously, and I'm sorry I can't rattle through all of them. I've picked out some of the different names that we've had. But the one person that sort of came to me after sort of looking at all Mbappe's records that has actually had a remarkable decade and a good place to end is Gareth Bale.
Yeah.
When I spoke to you, Ollie, before this, I sort of said, how close was Gareth Bale to being your favourite as a Spurs fan? Because I know, obviously, ridiculous early season with them and then has punctuated the last few years, despite not playing regularly, with absolutely incredible moments. Famously scored that hat-trick against Inter Milan, which retired Maicon.
I mean,
that was
the start of the decade. Yeah. We put him in the Champions League team of the season in the first 11. Because, I mean, he's won four, right? Which is amazing. Part of the three in a row. A direct winner. Two directly winners. In 2014, he scored the header. It was Di Maria's work, but he scored the header. And then in 2018, he came off the bench and basically won Madrid the final with his overhead kick and with his... And I also think he scored the greatest cup final winning goal of the decade, maybe ever, where he just destroyed Mark Bartra. Mark Bartra. Hashtag still running.
Ran off the pitch.
Ran off the pitch. 5 yards off the pitch. Runs back. Catches him up. Overtakes him. Gets the ball, runs all the way into the basketball, and still has the composure. Just slip it. And
the thing about that goal that always stands out to me is like the fine margins of the finish. I think is it
Pinto's in goal.
He nearly gets it, and he's at his near post. Yeah. So it's not an easy finish by any stretch.
It's an unreal goal to watch it, because the thing is as well, is Madrid scored first in that game. Di Maria scored. Barca equalised through, of all people, Bartra, and Barca were in the ascendancy as the game was. You're thinking, oh, okay, Barca are going to nick this, or it's going to be right, penalties, and Barca are going to win penalties. And then Bale's like, nope. And just, it
was the thing I like as well, like predating the whole Maicon thing, which was in 2010, January 2010, right at the start of the decade, there was rumours of him being linked to, I think it was Nottingham Forest and Birmingham City on loan moves, because he couldn't get in the Spurs team under Redknapp. And whenever he had played, he had that record where Spurs didn't win in 26 Premier League games, I think. Yep. He was signed as a left back, couldn't get a game. And then there was injuries, and he basically, Redknapp shoved him onto the left wing, and he just exploded from that half season. And then,
he went from literally the least successful player in terms of not winning a game into the British player with the most Champions League,
guided Wales to the semi-finals of 2016.
Became their all-time top scorer this decade.
And 2020.
Yeah.
And the best stat of them all, in his famous season for Spurs, his 9 goals from outside the box is the most ever in a single Premier League season, when he was just like, I'll stand in the middle of the pitch, I'll shoot, and we'll win the games.
They won so many games by like 1-goal margins when he did that as well.
Yeah, and they were probably all from those ones, those 9 from outside the box. So, I just thought, in terms of the Mark Bartra goal, incredible speed, the Champions League goal, which has been debated as like one of the best Champions League goals, especially this decade, because it was in the final, out of favour won that.
That's why Zidane doesn't like him.
Yes, because he's rivaled his volley against Leverkusen. But the thing, again, we mentioned was that because he doesn't play often, he becomes one of the most forgotten men.
Well, decade in ignominy, basically, which is a shame, because he's such... He's never maybe been as consistent as Cristiano, which is what a lot of people wanted him to be in terms of a goal scorer. But he's produced in so many big moments for Real Madrid. Like, producing... And, had just as big of a hand in delivering that triple Champions League as anyone else, really. Yeah. Well, not Ramos or Modric, maybe, but most other players. Like, they don't win the third one without him. You know, they don't get to the... This is the thing as well. Zinedine Zidane should really be a bit more grateful, because they... because when 2015-16, Real Madrid were awful, right? They won the Champions League, they were awful. They played a semi-final against PSG. No, against Man City, sorry, and it's literally the worst semi-final ever. Two legs of just god-awful, boring football. There's only one goal, an own goal, forced by Gareth Bale, getting the ball, dribbling in from the right, and just pinging. And it went in, it was a deflection, it was an own goal. But if Bale doesn't do that, Madrid don't make that final, and nothing is the same for Real Madrid. Like,
Well, there you go. So massive. We've discussed four players each. We've discussed four players, one each. Discussed the fans of the Skorga Talker. I'm going to call you fans. The writers. But maybe we've just decided that Gareth Bale is the player of the decade.
Tim Sherwood, to have said, "Oh yeah, you know, we knew he would be like this." Oh, Jake.
Why am I getting a phone call from Edinburgh?
It's gonna be a joke, but I can't think of one.
Okay, cool.